for the complication. So anyway, it's not easy. So let me quickly jump to the topic. So I will talk about the model design and computation for the quantum criticality and the gauge field, covered to matter field. So actually I prepared some jokes, but I guess let me just skip this. So anyway, so I will talk about how do we design lattice model to simulate non-Fermi liquid? How do we couple discrete gauge field with fermions? How do we couple continuous gauge field with fermions and generate all kind of exotic state of matter? I guess I will not have time to talk about the Fluxed magnets, but let me just move on. So I can skip this. So I'm doing Monte Carlo. So I'm doing Monte Carlo simulations for the interacting fermions. I'm using the determined quantum Monte Carlo method. And we design model to study and itinerate quantum critical point in which we can realize non-Fermi liquid. And even when I enhance the symmetry of the Bose mode, we can study pseudo gap and the superconductivity, so on and so forth. So let me gradually jump to the topic. So the model is actually very simple. I basically have three fermions. I have a bosonic field, bosonic interacting system, which can drive this itself into a quantum critical point. And then I couple the fermion with bosons with some coupling stress. So that's the model, very simple. And we have done quite a few work on this. And this is the first one. The first one was very simple. I just use fermion coupled to transfer the field Ising model. I let the SD of the Ising couple to SD of fermions. So as I tune the transverse Ising field going from ferromagnetic to paramagnetic, I can generate this quantum critical point. In both sides of the quantum critical point, I have ferromagnetic metal and paramagnetic metal. And at quantum critical point, I'm looking for non-Fermi liquid. Non-Fermi liquid usually parameterized in the fractional power of the self-energy. So actually, but this is my self-energy. My self-energy actually has divergence behavior, not a convergence behavior, go to zero in the power law. The reason being that because we do finite temperature simulation, so we have a thermal contribution from the self-energy, which we have to be subtract to reveal the quantum part. And there are some procedure to subtract this thermal part of the self-energy, which I will go into neglect. But the point is that after I do this, namely, the self-energy goes as 1 over omega for the thermal part. After I neglect this, or let me see, I just multiply my self-energy with omega, which reveal the constant part of the thermal and the quantum part, now with a power of 5 over 3. So if I plot my omega times self-energy versus omega to the power of 5 over 3, I should see a straight line of my data. This is the same data as this divergence behavior, and I do see a straight line. And this straight line actually are the non-Fermi liquid. And if I subtract now the thermal part, I can review this quantum part, which goes nicely with the asymptotic omega to the power of 3 over 2. So this is for the Ising quantum critical point. Now we keep going. We now enhance the symmetry of the bosons, the boson coupled to the fermions. I enhance the symmetry of the bosons from Ising to XY. So now I'm using quantum rotor model coupled to my fermions. So the coupling is slightly more complicated. I have this fermion polymatrix sigma x sigma y dot product with the rotor of x and y component. Now the bosonic order parameter is not conserved anymore. So the story, but the overall shape of the phase diagram is very similar, that when the rotors are ordered, when I have a zero temperature x, y order or ferromagnetic order, so my Fermi liquid is split due to the ferromagnetic coupling. When the rotors are disordered, and my Fermi surface go back to the free fermions. I'm interested at the critical point. At the quantum critical point, I will look for the self-energy. Now, this quantum critical self-energy is slightly different from the Ising one. It's no longer the power of 3 over 2, but 1 over 2. It's a square root of omega. This is due to the fact that the bosonic order parameter is not conserved. And the practice is the same, that the bare self-energy obtained from finite temperature quantum Monte Carlo simulation, it still has a very mild 1 over omega divergence. Now we have to again subtract the thermal contribution to reveal the true quantum contribution, which goes as square root of omega. So actually, because now the coupling, because the fluctuation of the boson is stronger, actually the raw data, the data that we simulate at finite temperature already had a substantial of the pond already entered the asymptotic region compared with the icing part. So this is for the rotor model that are coupled to the fermions. I chose a particular strength of the coupling, K equals one. Now if I enhance the coupling from one to two, just make it four times larger, it's still smaller than the bandwidth, but it's substantially larger than the previous case. Something even funny happening that is at the original part where there was a quantum critical point. Now, because the enhanced coupling, the bosonic fluctuation is even stronger and the immediate pairing to the fermions. Now, actually, we can see there's an S-wave pairing, S-wave triplet pairing, actually. It's triplet because spin triplet, but the orbital singlet pairing that generated at finite temperature. And above this S-wave pairing in this yellow region, if I look, if I zoom in, actually I can see pseudo gap behavior from a dense stuff state. The way to see it is just really compute the self-energy which we had from Monte Carlo and run the analytical continuation to get the spectrum information. This is in real frequency. So I'm plot the local dense stuff state at the function of omega at the Fermi level. I mean, this omega equals zero at Fermi level for different temperatures. So basically what I'm doing is sit right at U equals six and go down in temperature. If I go down in temperature, I can see that the dense stuff state, which at high temperature, is a metallic phase, gradually develop this minimal, which is the pseudo gap behavior. Only when the temperature is lower, in this case, it's lower as one over 20 in our unit, that the full gap opens. The full gap, this is the temperature actually where the TC enters, because we can measure the pairing susceptibility and determine the XY transition of the S wave pairing. That TC from data collapse is 1 over 20. So basically, I'm saying is that because of this enhanced quantum fluctuation above the quantum critical point, we have a superconductivity, and above that, this fluctuation generates this pseudo gap behavior in the dense stuff state. So that is a boson field coupled to the Fermi surface. And of course, we can do the antiferromagnetic coupling, but let me just for time sake skip this. So this is for the real bosons. The boson has not good gauge field. But if I want to put the gauge field into this, the game becomes more complicated, but at the same time, it's more interesting because now we can generate a situation where the Fermi surface can really violate the Lachenger quantity. So this is actually one of the work we did. This is the orthogonal metal setting. That is, we couple the fermion with the icing gauge field. We introduce an icing matter field, which also couples the icing gauge field. Now we have the icing gauge field itself. So both the matter field, fermion matter field, and the icing matter field, they are not gauge invariant. So what is gauge invariant is this component object, which made of this F times SZ. So this is the real fermion. So now I can tune actually by tune the gauge field from deconfined to confined or from confined to deconfined. I can generate a situation where the composite fermion has a full Fermi surface to the situation where the composite fermion loses its Fermi surface. So let me directly jump to the point. So actually this is the data. So we can compute the fermion Green's function, the fermion Green's function of the composite fermion as I tune the gauge field from confined to deconfined, and in the middle is the critical point. At the critical point, there's a Higgs transition that we can see this Fermi surface, which respect Lachenger quantum, gradually evaporated. Although it's happened actually at zero temperature, it's quantum evaporated and go to a state where there's no Fermi surface. But this state is still a metal, because if I measure the magnetic response of this state, it still show the same instability close to pi. So the center here is a pi. So in this three case where the gauge field is confined, critical, and the deconfined, in this three case, the Fermi surface has the same magnetic response. So it's only the Fermi surface itself disappear, but the surface is still there. Just you cannot see it. So this state is people call this is the orthogonal metal. So I can keep going. I can even dope the orthogonal metal and generate more fancy situation where I can have the situation of the Fermi arc. I dope the orthogonal metal to have a Fermi arc, the transition from a Fermi arc to a full Fermi surface. And the Fermi arc, if now, at this case, gauge field are still deconfined. If I confine the gauge field, I can generate superconductivity, so on and so forth. So these are a lot of games one can play if I couple the discrete gauge field to the matter field. So that's, I think, for the sake of time, I don't want to go very detailed into this, but I can tell you that with this setting, with this model design, we can generate Fermi arc from the situation. And a Fermi arc, if I plot the spectrum information of the Fermi arc along the high symmetry path, actually you can see a very similar feature that only in the arc region, in the along the pi direction, you have some Fermi surface remaining quasi-particle fraction, but on the other part is gapped. So that is the magic of the deconfined gauge field. So now the magic can keep going. The gauge field, it was, what I showed was discrete. Now if I make the gauge field continuous, basically U1 gauge field coupled to the fermions, we can still do some simulation on this. The setting is very, you know, it's very simple, basically, that I have a square lattice, my fermion live on the lattice side, and the gauge field, which is represented by this phase, live on the link, you know, controlled by this. So there are two types of actions, there are two types of Lagrangian. So the fermions is a Psi field, and the fermion has a Hopping T, but also it fills the existence of this U1 gauge field. The gauge field is a continuous variable now, it's not discrete, it's U1 gauge field. And the U1 gauge field has its own time dynamics. So this is a compact U1 gauge field in a 2 plus 1. And we enforce some pi flux pattern for the gauge field. So this is the situation we can simulate again in a determinant quantum Monte Carlo. And the whole simulation in a short term is just the trace of the fermion. So the trace of the gauge field is simple. It's a basically a 2 plus 1 bosonic setting. It's very easy. And the trace of the fermion become a determinant. And the determinant, we can do the even number of flavors of these fermions. And that this plot shows we actually studied a two flavor, four flavor, six flavor, and eight flavor. And in all of this, let me show you some of the result. So basically, result is following that the J controls the coupling of the fermion and the gauge field. The NF is a flavor. So in all these numbers we have, fermion flavors we tried, that we found that we think there is a stable phase of U1 spin liquid, if you like. This is the critical phase where all the correlation is power law. But as the J actually was in the denominator in front of the time derivative of the gauge field, of the U1 gauge field. When the J is strong, the gauge field will confine and will drive the fermion into different symmetry breaking phase. For the two flavor case, it will become anti-ferromagnetic order. For the four flavor case, it will become a valence bond solid and the anti-ferromagnetic order. And for the higher case, it's always become a ferro from a U1 gauge field, U1 deconfined phase to a valence bond solid phase. So the way to determine this phase diagram actually is rather standard. We just measure, for example, we measure the correlation ratio. This is the result for the NF equals to 2 case. We measure the correlation ratio that, you know, as a function of J for different system sizes. So in the right-hand side, as we increase the system size, this ratio is larger, means I have an order. In this case, it's a pi anti-ferromagnetic. On the left-hand side, when I increase the system size, this ratio becomes smaller, means the order is vanishing. Or its power law correlation. So, and the crossing, the rough crossing is the critical point or its transition point. So within this critical phase, for example, we can measure the dimer-dimer correlation or the spin-spin correlation of the fermions generated from the fermion operators. But of course, it should be gauge invariant. We can measure these correlation functions. We can see the power law decay. And from the power law decay on the finite size lattice, at J smaller than GC, which means that I'm sitting in this red colored region, I can read the scaling dimension of this correlation, of these operators. The scaling dimension maybe is too small to see, but from a scaling dimension, I can read the eta, the anomalous dimension of this U1 gauge field, coupled matter field situation. And I can plot 1 plus eta versus 1 over the fermion flavor. And what we do see is that from 2 flavor, 4 flavor, 6 and 8 flavor, asymptotically, this is going to the large N limit where the scaling dimension, this number 1 plus eta is 4. So this is what we saw. And here also we continue. So that was about this UN deconfined phase. This which by itself is already very interesting. But how about the transition point? If I talk about this transition point, you know, it belongs to this QED3 gross null XY universality. So this is actually we worked with Lucas and Mihail, and that we try to determine the critical scaling dimension of the parameters at this critical point for different flavors. So what Lucas and Mihail told us was that from this series expansion calculation, that this scaling dimension of the VBS and the AFM at the critical point are actually different. So in a phase they are the same, but the critical point they differ. They are pointing to the different 1 over n limit, namely that for the VBS it's going towards 1, and for the AFM it's going towards 2 as NF increases. So we determine this critical point by what I showed in the previous slide, and we see that at this critical point, we measure the correlation of the spin and of the dimer of the VBS, if you like, at the critical point. Again, by fitting the power law, we can read the scaling dimension. So this is too small to see, but if I plot the data, again, in this data, which was in a way of writing in this large N result, versus 1 over the fermion flavors, so what we do see is that this blue color, this is VBS scaling dimension. As NF increase, you know, at small N, it deviates from this large N curve, but as NF increase, it's going down towards 1. At the same time, the spin correlation, the spin scaling, the antiferromagnetic spin dimension as NF increase is going to 2. So this difference, although the error bar is large, but this difference is clear. So this is again a way to see that, first we establish this UN deconfined phase. Second, we can talk about this transition, separate the UN deconfined phase to a confined phase of the universality of QED3 gross null XY. So that was, I was very quick to rush through this fermion part. I don't know how much time I can still talk.
Yes, you have still at least 10 more minutes, 15 minutes.
Oh, I still have 10 more minutes. Okay, so I was too far. Then I can go back to my joke. So, anyway, let me just talk about this this serious stuff. So that was very fast, but what I want to say was that by model design, namely couple fermions to critical boson, to the discrete gauge field, to the continuous gauge field, we can generate an interesting phase, non-Fermi liquid, orthogonal metal, UN deconfined phase. We can also generate an interesting quantum critical point, gross null QED3, for example. And there's another set of model which in represent by the fluctuated magnets in a spin language or in a quantum dimmer model, in a dimmer language, where the model by itself does not have gauge field, but we can actually see the emergent gauge field from the simulation, Monte Carlo simulations. So that was this part. And let me start with the part where we studied the spin model, the fluctuated spin model. So for the expert in the audience, so people know what I'm talking about, is the BFG, Balanced Fischer-Gerwin model. It's a model talking about the fluctuated spins on the Kagome lattice. So basically, I have a plaquette, of the hexagon of the antiferromagnetic JZ of the spin 1/2, which gave me the fluctuated manifold, the classical fluctuated manifold, and I add the quantum fluctuation. In this case, was in the ferromagnetic XY fluctuation to enhance to organize this fluctuated manifold into a D2 spin liquid. So this model, this variation, we actually add another J prime to stabilize the Fermi liquid, the quantum spin liquid. So this model is very well known that hosts a D2 spin liquid ground state. In different, the H means that the Zeeman field, if you like, in different field. In the boson language, that means different boson fittings of the lattice. So this is half fitting. This is one-third fitting of the bosons. So in both cases, we can realize ground state of the V2 spin liquid. One has the odd little gauge, one have the even gauge, little gauge. But these gauge fields are emergent. And how do you see the emergent nature of this gauge field? We can see this from dynamical measurement. For example, what I'm showing here was the spin-spin correlation inside this two spin liquid phase on the way towards the condensation of the Voisin to the valence bond solid. So first of all, the energy scale was very small. The Jz is one. So energy scale is where it's 1/50. It's very small. And in this small energy scale, we can see that as I'm towards the Voisin condensation, the spectrum, the spin spectrum will develop a gap closing procedure. And the interesting thing is that here the gap close at gamma point at the Euler condensation, but also at a finite momentum. And this is the momentum where the Valence bond solid in this case was ordered. So actually this finite momentum condensation is a non-trivial manifestation of the odd D2 gauge structure in the system. So this is called a translational symmetry fractionalization. So that we can see. And for the even gauge field, as I enter towards the quantum critical point to the valence bond solid to condense the Voisin, there's no finite momentum gap closing point. This is because it is even. There's no translational symmetry fractionalization. So that actually can be shown very clearly. Now this is a condensed Voisin. If I condense the spin one, what will happen? If I condense the fractionalized the spin 1/2 object, what will happen? What will happen there is that you will see, in a bosonic language, you will see a fractionalized transport. Namely, you will see a fractionalized conductivity of the bosons. So this is just like the fractional quantum Hall that we can see because of topological order, you can see the fractional transport of the conductivity. In this case, the conductivity was measured from the current correlation functions. And for the conventional XY, so this is the XY 2+1 XY transition. For the conventional XY transition, this conductivity has a universal value. This conductivity actually has quite a few terms, but there's a constant term which has a universal value. That universal value in our unit is 0.36. So this is the universal value for the XY transition. But for the transition to condense the spin, so this is called XY star, that value, which is still measured from the current correlation function, is a quarter of the XY value. Because now the charge carrier is not a spin, is not a Boson number one, but a fractionalized spin, Boson number 1/2. So each J is half of what is supposed to be. The product of this J is a quarter of what it's supposed to be. And we do measure this from our, at this quantum critical point of condensed Voisins, and from the Matsubara frequency dependence of the conductance, we can read the plateau value, the saturation value, both for the even spin liquid and for the odd spin liquid. And where in both cases, the saturation value or the plateau value is a quarter of that 0.36. So this is another signature of the gauge structure. So this this was for the spin, and I can skip all this. Another part was that how about dimer model? Dimer model was also a model where people talk about emergent gauge field. If I put my dimer model in a non-bipartite lattice. So actually this was motivated by this paper from Subir and his student Renner, which we discussed, that they told us that for the Rydberg atom setting, the Kagome lattice Rydberg atom in some limit can be mapped to a triangle lattice dimer model. So now the question is, dimer model is even more complicated, I mean, in a technical term, than the spin model I just described, because there is a local constraint of all the sites. So this actually requires new method development. So basically, Zheng Yan, so now he was a graduate student in Fudan, now he's a postdoc with me, Zheng Yan basically developed a dimer model version of this SSE, stochastic series expansion, which respect the local constraint. So we can now do finite temperature simulation for the quantum dimer model as we did for the finite temperature simulation for the spin model. So I will skip this, but I'm just jump to the point. The point is that, for example, if I study one dimer per site, triangle lattice quantum dimer model. So it is well known you have RK point. Below RK point, you have a little spin liquid. And below little spin liquid, you have this square root of 12 by square root of 12 Valence bond solid. So we can study the dimer correlation function now with our method. we can study the Y-zone-Y-zone correlation function with our method, and these are the spectrum of the dimer of the Y-zone and of the convolution of the Y-zone. As I go from RK point, where V over T equals 1 enters to the valence bound solid, so what I see again is the closing of the gap at finite momentum point. So this is again like in the spin, as in all the spin liquid case, here the little spin liquid is also odd. I again see the translational symmetry of fractionalization. So one more interesting was that the dimer actually is a bound state of Y-zones. Now we can get a single Y-zone spectrum from our simulation, and we can do the convolution of the Y-zone RK point. Now, if I compare the convolution, which assume the Y-zone has no interaction, compared with the bound state of the Y-zone, you can see actually the bound state has a lower energy compared with convolution. That again means that in a spin liquid phase, the Y-zone attract each other. So they have non-trivial interactions. So that can be reviewed. So this is one thing. And now there's another thing was that that was one dimer per site. Now if I do the two dimer per site, what happened? So for the experts in the field, in the audience, so people know that for two dimer per site, there's a controversy that there was the different papers saying the phase diagram looks differently. So the phase diagram for the two different previous paper was that in the large, very negative V attraction part of the dimer, you have lattice pneumatic, this is known. In the close to RK point, you have the little spin liquid, this is also known. The question is there a single transition or is there an intermediate phase? So this two paper was different in the transition point. Both of them saying there's a single transition, but they have a different, very big difference of the transition point. One was roughly here, another was roughly here. So we come with our simulation method, now study this transition more carefully with the finite temperature simulation. The previous study was ED and a small size QMC in a projection version. That we see the Y-zone, the lattice pneumatic order, this order parameter actually going through a two-step process towards the RK point. So indeed, at the very negative part of this V, there's a lattice pneumatic order. But in the part where these two papers was different, they were not sure, there's a new phase. This phase is called a Y-zone plaquette phase. So this is a phase where, So this is a phase, actually, where if I construct for the expert now, if I construct the effective Lagrangian of the model, now the Y-zone order, the phi is Y-zone order parameter, which has an O3 symmetry. Now this lattice pneumatic phase corresponding to this effective Lagrangian with the anisotropic term, which is negative. The new phase we discovered was this Lagrangian with the anisotropic term, which is positive. So from the order parameter histogram, it's clear that there is a phase cornered cubic transition towards a phase centered cubic towards a corner centered cubic. So this is a first order transition. And the reason the previous two work didn't see this phase is because they didn't identify the order parameter. The order parameter was not in a dimer channel. If you measure a dimer-dimer correlation function in this region, it is zero. It is short range. This is actually, we compared Monte Carlo with ED. The dimer covering is constantly one over three. So this is a symmetric phase in the dimer channel. But if you measure the Y-zone correlation, or if you measure this kinetic correlation of the flip term of this T-term of the dimer model, this term actually shows an order. So this is an off-diagonal order. This off-diagonal order, which has a Y-zone plaquette translational symmetry break. So that was what we can see. And now this phase is a crystal. When this phase goes into the quantum critical point, or when the quantum critical point condenses to this phase, there is a continuous transition. This transition, which is O3 star, the previous one I was calling O2 star, this should be O3 star. But from the recent bootstrap result, we know that the O3 transition was not stable against the cubic asymmetry and anisotropy. So this is, in a more precise language, this should be a cubic star transition, not O3 star.
Ziyang, sorry to interrupt you. You have about 3 minutes left.
I'm done.
Okay, very good.
So we collapse the data. And so the thing I want to say is that this transition, the O3 is not stable, but the difference is very, very tiny. So I think from bootstrap, the difference is in the fifth or the sixth decimal after the zero. So for the practical purpose, if we use O3 exponent, we can collapse the data. So this is, we know this is a cubic star transition, but it looks like an O3 star. So that actually gives you the true phase diagram of the model. And this I can skip. This actually related with the critical experiment. But let me skip this. So let me just stop here. I'm just showing you that in the short time, we can study the gauge field, the cover to meta field with proper model design, with proper numerical method of design. So thank you. Yeah.
Okay. So let's see if we have some questions from the audience. I hope you can hear us.
I do.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. First question from Lucas.
Yeah.
Hi, Siang.
Oh, Lucas. Okay.
Hi.
Hey.
Siang, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Yes.
Question on the first part. You said something like subtracting some thermal part, some alpha of T from the thermionic self energy, maybe slide 10 or so.
Yes.
So how is this thermal part estimated? I mean, do you know it exactly for some reason or?
Yeah, very good question. So that actually goes back to the model design. So the fact that we know the closed form of the thermal part rely on few conditions. One of the conditions is that the coupling, the effective coupling should be smaller than the bandwidth. So this is the freedom of our model. That the coupling in this case, for example, this C, I can put by hand, couple between the fermion and the boson. So now if you use Hubbard model, for example, the U, at least at the scale of T, then it won't work. So the coupling has to be weak. When the coupling is weak, the sheer value of the self-energy should be also small. So I'm saying it's divergence, but actually if you look at the numbers, it's very small compared with the lowest Madhubara frequency I can have. So only when it's satisfied, so from the, I think this was Andre and Avi, they did the, is it called the modified Eliasberg type of calculation. They can verify this 1/(ω) form. So from this, we can extract the data.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah.
Other questions? Maybe I could ask a question then. The part about the confinement with a gauge field. So yeah. your model, of course, is a compact compact gauge field.
Yes.
But then when you say this is related to a gross nouveau with the gauge field, I would assume that the field theory for that is with a non-compact gauge field. So you're presumably saying that the monopoles do not really matter at the transition.
Okay. So actually, this is the question you should go to Lucas or Michael, the next speaker. So that was this collaboration. Though I think I was told that, from their large-end calculation, the scaling dimension look like this. So actually, I'm not sure whether in a field theory setting, this is compact or non-compact.
Yeah, I would imagine that because it's a large N, you are assuming that it's that the monopoles don't matter and that it is non-compact, right?
It's the same concept. Mm-hmm. The point is you can do a very similar calculation for single monopole relevance or irrelevance of single monopole mm-hmm. as in the usual compact or non-compact mm-hmm. QED3. And for single monopole, you can show that large N is irrelevant.
Okay. Further questions?
Hello, can I ask a question?
Yes, please, go ahead.
So if we do not know the dynamical exponents in quantum Monte Carlo simulation, so how can we do a scaling analysis to find out the dynamical exponent? I mean, how to set up the size and the temperature consistently with the dynamical exponent if we do not know that first?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. So, yeah, you know, we don't really not know, right? For example, in many of the cases I mentioned, we do know, for example, for these Boson models, right, the z equals 1. So here we set beta scale with L.
Yeah, yeah.
So for the Fermion model, of course, you are right. So some of the model I mentioned has z equals 3. Some of them had z equals 2.
Yes.
But for a practical point of view, I mean, for the simulation, for the sake of simulation, we usually do beta scale with L.
Okay, if there are no further questions, so let's thank our speaker again.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.